a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin. Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines. Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous...
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Wednesday, 29th May. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Celia.
In Dunedin news, all but one city councillor have voted in favour of asking the government to create special visas for Palestinian refugees, reported by the Otago Daily Times. During a council meeting, Councillor Christine Gerry had put forward the motion asking the council to call on the Minister of Immigration, the Honourable Erica Stanford, to urgently establish a special visa for family members of the New Zealand-Palestinian community affected by the war in Gaza, and make every diplomatic effort to ensure safe passage for these family members out of the war zone. This came up after members of the Palestinian community made pleas to help secure the safety of their relatives caught up in the Israel-Hamas conflict in Gaza. Several of those in the Palestinian community spoke during the public forum, including Rasha Abu Safir, who said she had discovered her former home, school, and university in Gaza had been destroyed in the conflict. Councillor Gerry said that her motion had been carefully researched and worded. The government had previously created a special bespoke visa for Ukrainian refugees, and Councillor Gerry imagined the Ministry for Immigration could do something similar for Palestinian refugees. In opposition to this, Councillor Vandevis said that he agreed entirely the council's role was to advocate for the community, but said that this neglected to mention that our community is not only Palestinian, but also Jewish, Dutch, Irish, and everything else. Other councillor members had begged to differ with Vandevis's supposition. Councillor Jim O'Malley said that there were times when councils, unions, schools, and other organisations had put pressure on government, and this situation is no different. Mayor Jules Radich said that he did not see this as a motion of aggression or blame, saying it is one of safety, and it's on the side of humanity.
The Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust have made a comprehensive submission to the Dunedin City Council, calling for increased commitment to the creative scene in Aotearoa. The submission emphasises the vital role of the gallery, Te Whare o Rukutia, and the broader creative funding. Dunedin Fringe representatives highlighted the need for sustained investment in those areas to foster a vibrant cultural environment. Te Whare o Rukutia, a central hub for artistic expression, was particularly spotlighted as essential for local artists and performers. The Fringe's call to action underscores the importance of supporting creative spaces and initiatives to enrich the city's cultural landscape. Stay tuned for an interview with Kate and Ruth from the Dunedin Fringe, who will share their personal insights and the significance of this submission for the city's future.
In student news, a 27-hour encampment was undertaken by students for justice in Palestine at the University of Canterbury last week, leading to an agreement being made between the student group and UC. The encampment took place in Undercroft, a communal study and eating space equivalent to the Link at the University of Otago. Over 100 students and non-students gathered at Undercroft at 1:30 p.m. last Tuesday, with some remaining for the night and staying till Wednesday afternoon. On day one of the encampment, UC warned protesters that they would be removed by police from Undercroft if the encampment remained past 5 p.m. Police visited the scene prior to the warning, but did not return. Speaking to Canter, UC's student magazine, a spokesperson for UCSJP said the demands of the encampment were full financial transparency from the university, amnesty for student protesters, and for UC to condemn the destruction of Gazan universities and start offering scholarships and placements to Palestinian students and academics. In a statement put out by UCSJP, the occupation led to three negotiations meeting with senior officials at the uni, with multiple wins such as an agreement from UC to investigate the revising procurement of its resources to exclude Israeli companies, committing to making a statement of support for all at-risk universities, being more proactive in bringing Palestinian scholars to the uni through the Scholars at Risk program, as well as full amnesty for all occupiers in the encampment. This follows UC explicitly disclosing its investment policy that prohibits investments in armaments and its ties to Israeli companies Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Hewlett-Packard, of which it currently has none with the two former, but procures hardware with the latter.
An early-stage investment group, Ice House Ventures, who give funds, exposure, and access to young entrepreneurs beginning their business journeys, hosted a startup event here in Dunedin last Thursday. Featuring at the event was special guest speaker Lucy Blackiston, founder and CEO of Shit You Should Care About, the incredibly popular newsletter and Instagram page designed to bring real-world problems in a light where young people can make sense of it, enabling her large audience to enjoy both pop culture and current affairs. A student in attendance said her key takeaways from Lucy is to not be afraid to do something different, trust your gut, choose carefully whose advice you're given, and if you have an idea, do it because you're obsessed with it. If you don't know it already, check out the daily newsletter Shit You Should Care About.
In national news, weather in New Zealand has become more sporadic as the season goes by. There has been a light dusting of snow in parts of the south last night and has brought blustery conditions to much of the country, according to the Otago Daily Times. Queenstown Lake District Council spokesman has said that snow had fallen in the Crown Range Road and on Coronal Peak overnight, but in the morning had been cleared and gritted. Snow has also fallen on Milford Road around Homer Tunnel. The route remains open, but NZTA Waka Kotahi has cautioned that snow clearing equipment could be operating this morning. Black ice has also formed on the roads in central Otago, prompting police to advise extra care when on the roads. A strong wind watch has been put in place until after 4 p.m. for coastal Clutha and Dunedin south of Otago Peninsula. In the coastal Southland and around Rakiura or Stewart Island, the watch is in place until noon. An orange storm wind warning for Auckland has been put in place tomorrow, with gusts forecast to reach 120 kilometres, in some parts made worse with thunderstorms, reported by RNZ. Met Service says that severe gale southwesterlies at 120 kilometres per hour in exposed places may start around 3 p.m. on Wednesday and last around 11 hours. The gusts could also damage trees, power lines and unsecured structures. Driving may also be hazardous.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Wednesday, 29th of May. We'll be coming back to you shortly to speak with Kate and Ruth from Fringe. Next up, though, is Mild Orange, Time of Our Lives.
Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. Joining us in the booth is Kate Schrader and Ruth Harvey from the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust, who have made a comprehensive submission to the Dunedin City Council calling for increased commitment to the creative scene in Aotearoa. The Dunedin Fringe Art Trust put together Dunedin, New Zealand Young Writers Fest, Amp Music Project, the venue Te Whare o Rukitia, and the White Box Gallery.
Welcome, Kate and Ruth. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Kia ora.
Firstly, could you just tell the listeners about the submission and how you went about putting it together?
Sure. So our submission, it was pretty big and it covered a bunch of topics. But the key things that we talked about were the space that we managed that you mentioned, Te Whare o Rukitia, the live music action plan, or the OLMAP as it's known, which is a piece of work that the DCC has put together in conjunction with largely the music community about preserving the very special vibe we have here in Dunedin for music, live music. Mm-hmm. And then more broadly about operational funding for arts organisations and kind of the pressure that arts organisations are under, generally speaking, now more than ever. Is that right?
Yeah.
Those are the main things
we
talked about.
Yeah.
And how we went about putting it together. I mean, it was a huge piece of work. I really can't emphasise that enough. And we're very lucky because Ruth has a background in advocacy, and it's something she did, had developed her skills in a lot in her previous role at AS220 in the States. So, you know, I just want to give a shout out to Ruth and say I've learned a lot from her through this process. It's been quite incredible to see. She's a real force. But yeah, it was all about talking to the community first, like very community-led, and going out to the people that we work with across all of our programs to understand what they actually want from this city, like what's important to them, what their priorities are, and what struggles they're facing in terms of engaging with the arts and creativity in Aotearoa.
So, you know, the number one thing that always comes up is that there's never enough money to support their practice. Mm. And we feel very strongly that artists should be paid for the unbelievable skills that they share with the community. But also, Dunedin has a long history of issues around losing venues, live music venues, but also performing arts venues and theatres. So, you know, our consultation with the community did have an emphasis around the future of Te Whare o Rokitia, which had been created as a temporary solution to particularly the loss of the Fortune Theatre in 2018, so 6 years ago. But, you know, it's also dovetails with the loss of music venues around the city, and just that some of the existing venues have challenges. You know, they're old or have a lot of stairs or need some structural upgrades to make them safe and comfortable for people. So that is the kind of environment in which Te Whare o Rokitia, which was always supposed to be a flexible space, was kind of brought into being.
That's amazing. That really kind of answered a lot of my questions.
Woohoo! A plus.
Yeah, I think that's so amazing. So then, how do you envision increased funding impacting the creative scene in Dunedin?
Oh, in so many ways.
We dream about this all the time.
Yeah, it's like the idea of winning lotto, really.
Yeah, which we talk about on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of, like, I mentioned operational funding. So what that means is funding that isn't tagged to a specific project, because most funding for arts and creativity in New Zealand is project-based. So you go to, say, Creative New Zealand or the DCC or whomever and say, we want to do this thing for this finite period of time. But, like, we're an organisation that runs year-round, and we have operational costs like staff, like, you know, keeping the lights on.
Insurance,
dry stuff.
Yeah, boring.
Boring things that also need to be taken care of in order for us to do our work for the creative community, for our artists. And so part of our submission was advocating for more avenues for operational funding and kind of looser apron strings around, you know, more trust around what long-standing organisations use that money for, understanding that we actually know best. We or any of the other many arts organisations in the city or community organisations know the work that they do, and they know the best way to use those funds. So that's one part of it. We see that if that is provided through whatever means, whether that's local government, national, whatever, it can just make such a big impact, because it frees up the time of the people working for these organisations to actually do their job and be working on things that make an impact for artists and for communities.
And then I would also say, you know, like, I'm sure all of your listeners have an experience for their own selves about the cost of living crisis, right? Like, just how hard it is to make ends meet at the moment. Your money doesn't go as far. And same goes for artists and arts organisations. So, for example, Creative New Zealand is one of the biggest funders for the arts in the country. They haven't had increase in the amount of money that they can fund to organisations for 18 years.
Wow.
So you can imagine how in that time costs have gone up. I don't want to be paid the same for 18 years. You know, we have, we need a pay rise so we can pay our bills, and artists need a fair wage for what they do. So and, you know, that's just for Creative New Zealand. As things are becoming tougher in the economy, you know, it's just the amounts of money that are being awarded to people are just, you know, less and less and less. Even if it's only like 1,000 here or 1,000 there, that really adds up across, I don't know, 20 funders like Dunedin Fringe has. So, you know, of course, it's just putting so much pressure on people. But there is this, you know, really unjust expectation that artists and creative people should just do what they do for the love of it without being paid. And we are absolutely against that as a philosophy. And we know what arts, culture and creativity brings to our communities. It basically makes them good places to be, to live, and it is who we are as people. Every single person in this country is engaged in the arts in some way. So, you know, if we had more resource, we could do more great things for our communities.
That's such a good point, because people always talk about how you should do it because you love it. But then it's like, okay, I'm doing it because I love it, but now I'm doing it all the time, so then you got to get paid.
Yeah. I mean, do you ask a doctor to operate just for the love of it? Do you ask a lawyer to lawyer just for the love of it? No. It's all to do with the way that our society has been structured around what is and isn't valuable. And, you know, it is, we consider it to be our job to rage against that and to bring better conditions to the people who are, you know, enriching our communities.
It also embeds, and you talk about this a lot, Ruth, a really elitist view of the arts and culture. Like, it means that only people who can afford, because that drives up the price of attending, you know, events or exhibitions or whatever, what have you, whatever the art output is. It means you have to pay to engage with it, and it means you usually have to pay a lot. And so the things that people end up attending, or the people who attend, are people who can afford to do it. And that really entrenches the idea that only certain art is worth anything. So it's, yeah, it's just this kind of self-perpetuating
like cycle
problem.
We believe art is for everyone, and you know, so it is, as they say, a justice issue.
So then what would be, is there any particular consequences if the DCC were to not respond favourably to the submission?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the chunkiest part of it is us asking for operational support for Te Whare, the venue. And so just a bit of history about that space. The kaupapa that it was founded on, and originally it was in partnership with a bunch of other organisations, Prospect Park Productions, the Dunedin Arts Festival, Stage South, and Cara Patterson, who was an Aotearoa advisor at the time at DCC, just to shout out to those people. The commitment that was made by those original partners, and then by us as an organisation carrying on with that project, to all of the funders, to Mana Whenua, who gifted the name, and to all of the artists who've engaged with that space over the last almost 2 years, was that it would be kept accessible financially. And we feel extremely strongly that that should stay the case. However, as we were talking about, like, the funding landscape has really constricted, and so there isn't, like, a specific avenue right now to continue supporting that venue outside of this appeal that we've made to council. So the money that we've asked for would be to support staffing for marketing and production, so marketing so that people know that the space exists and know about the things happening in it, and that alleviates a lot of cost for the artists using the space and means that they get way more out of it, and production so that they're using it safely and supported and not just having to figure it all out and adding on extra costs for us to engage more personnel. So again, it's about keeping the cost down and making the experience good. I've lost my way. I was like, oh no, it's going to come to me, it's going to come to me.
No, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
And again, it's, yeah, it's amazing. And I think our listeners now will have a really good idea of what it's all about.
I remember it was about the consequences.
Oh, the consequences.
Didn't get the money.
The consequences
are costs will go up for artists. The only way, if we don't get that money, to keep the venue operational, and the community has said it's needed, particularly while we wait for the council to commit the $17.1 million it committed in the last 10-year plan process to build a new theatre. You know, what it will mean is that we have to put up the costs of renting or hiring that space.
If we keep running it.
If we keep running it. So, you know, ultimately, again, the burden falls on the people with the least amount of money to bring to the table. You know, somebody who submitted on our behalf, Maria Colombo, actually works at the university, amazing artist and performer, she said, you don't ask the rugby players to play on the hockey fields, and you don't ask the hockey people to play on the cricket fields. So why would you be asking artists to use spaces that aren't fit for purpose? And that is partly what we're saying, is this venue is still needed until a solution is found, particularly around the provision of fit for purpose space for theatre in this city. But Te Whare, you know, is used in all sorts of different ways. You know, the dance community uses it. It's used for all ages gigs, as well as performing arts of all types and community meetings, that kind of stuff. Mm. So all of this also dovetails with the other need in the community, which is around live music venues.
Mm. Yep.
And the Aotearoa live music action and implementation plans. So, yeah, did you want to mention that?
Me?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah.
I'm running out of breath.
So, I touched on it a little bit before. That's the massive piece of work that Save Dunedin Live Music and the Dunedin City Council have done to put together this, basically this list of actions that DCC, and hopefully in partnership with community organisations, are going to take to support and protect what remains of Dunedin's music scene, particularly around venues, but also, you know, programs and
grant funding
and that sort of thing.
Rehearsal spaces.
Yep.
We've just lost another rehearsal space in town.
Yep.
Et cetera.
Yeah. So, does that answer what?
Yeah. So, you know, we really just so admire the work of Save Dunedin Live Music. As Tristan mentioned in the intro, Dunedin Fringe also runs the AMPT Music Project, which is a music mentorship project for high school-aged young people. Understanding that, of course, if you want a scene to survive, if you want the Dunedin sound to continue, you have to be fostering the next generation of talent. Mm. And that's what AMPT is for. A lot of the gigging musicians around the city have either come through the program or they have been guest artists or tutors in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, AMPT plays a significant role in addressing some of the issues mentioned in the Live Music Action Plan. But, you know, that plan has yet to be resourced.
Mm.
So no financial commitments have been made by the council to achieve the things that they have outlined in that plan, including, making Te Whare Ora Kitea more accessible to the community.
Mm.
So,
okay.
Mm.
So looking ahead, what are your hopes and aspirations for the creative scene in Aotearoa over the next few years?
Mm. Honestly, we want to protect them because we currently have a government. I mean, some members of that coalition have pretty vocally talked about, like, specific artists and the arts in general. I'm trying to be diplomatic, not very supportive ways. We're scared about what's going to come out in the budget in terms of support for community organisations and specifically arts programs, arts organisations, Creative New Zealand. So I think we feel nervous.
Yeah.
About what's going to happen over the next couple of years and feel a real responsibility as an anchor arts organisation here to protect the programs that we have and speak up for, you know, the work that other organisations are doing to support our artists and our communities.
And that is a privilege that we have, right? Mm. We are, like, locally, we are, you know, even though we've only got 2.8 full-time staff, one of the bigger arts organisations, and that comes with a responsibility to take the time to do things like come and talk to you guys when other people aren't even being paid for the work that they're doing to support their organisation.
That's right.
So, and I would say the other thing, our aspirations are to just bring the arts community together as often as possible in the most supportive ways we possibly can.
Mm.
Because in this kind of funding environment particularly, it really encourages competition, right? To pit each other against, to fight for the resources that are out there.
Mm.
But that's kind of antithetical to the work that we're trying to do around building community.
Mm.
So I think we really just got to look after each other in this moment and look for ways to share our resources to make it as you know, as affordable as possible to do what we do, but also look for ways we can work together to support artists that, you know, maybe we haven't thought of before. So
yeah. Mm. Well, thank you so much for coming on, but for the work that you do for young artists. If young artists or the listeners do want to find you or know more information, where should they go?
Probably social media is a good place to find out what we're up to. Because we do different programs throughout the year, we have multiple accounts. So Dunedin Fringe is the biggest one, but it's quiet at the moment because we're not in fringe mode. New Zealand Young Writers Festival is the most active right now because that festival's coming up in September. Amped Music Project, these are all on Instagram.
Yeah.
And Facebook.
And our website.
But, yeah, Instagram. Go Instagram.
Our website
has everything and links to all of our socials, which is, what is our website?
DunedinFringe.nz.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much again, Kate and Ruth, for coming in and talking to us about the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust submission. This has been Radio 1 News at 1. I'm Tristan Serrano.
And I'm Celia Ward.
And thank you for listening.
This was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.